Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that, honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's story is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Hannah for bringing Marissa's story to my attention. A bit of housekeeping before we start this week's story. If you listen to this podcast and want more, Mysteriously Listed is back, with, for lack of a better word, listed-type episodes as well as the occasional unlisted episode. This allows me to tell the stories that interest me, and ones that aren't suited for Stolen Lives. I also want to do lighter topics in the true crime realm, to give my mental health a breather from the heavier stories we cover here. Also back for the occasional episode is Beyond Your Nightmares, creepy pastas and scary stories for those who, like me, enjoy some horror in their lives. If you are interested in listening, I will place links in the show notes. February 2018, Stockton Springs, Maine. First responders attended the scene of an unresponsive child. It was too late to save the 10-year-old's life, and she was pronounced dead at the scene. It was evident to all in attendance that this little girl was the victim of prolonged abuse, even though her mother would claim it was the girl that harmed herself, throwing herself in the basement stairs. But quickly her story would fall apart, and the true horrors into what happened to Marissa would be revealed. This is Marissa's story.
Marissa had a large bruise on her face. Her abdomen was swollen and purple, and she was cold to the touch.
Marissa Ann Kennedy was born October 29, 2007, in Middleton, New York, to mother Sharon Kennedy. Marissa's father was never in her life, but Sharon had all the support networks in place to successfully raise this little girl. Sharon has an intellectual disability. It would be revealed during the later criminal trial that her IQ was tested at 70, which, while isn't that low, she was still able to work. She was working at Walmart, and she was able to live independently. But then you are adding a newborn baby into the mix. Look, first-time parenting is hard for anyone, and Sharon was a single mother. Her parents, Joe and Roseanne Kennedy, opened their home for Sharon and the baby to move in with them. They helped out all they could, through the long sleepless nights, teething and all those exciting first milestones. And Marissa was happy and healthy and very, very much loved. With her grandparents, she learned how to swim. She built Legos with her grandfather and attended car shows. Joe and Roseanne reveled in their role as surrogate parents. In 2014, Sharon would start dating co-worker Julio Carrillo. And at first, Roseanne and Joe were a little wary of this relationship because Julio was 20 years older than Sharon. But ultimately, they loved seeing their daughter happy, and Julio seemed attentive towards the now 7-year-old Marissa. So they were supportive of Sharon and Julio's budding romance. The grandparents were obviously devastated when in July 2015, after Sharon and Julio got married, they would announce they were pregnant and moving to Maine, taking Marissa with them. But they were also excited for the young family and their fresh start. Joe would later recall the day of the move, seeing Marissa in their front yard looking sad, like she didn't want to leave them. Joe and Roseanne loved the Stockton Springs area of Maine, and they would buy a condominium at 7 Harbour View Drive. They had planned on moving there in their retirement to allow themselves to be active grandparents in their grandchildren's lives. But in the meantime, while they got on their feet, Sharon and Julio would live at the condominium, free of charge. Joe and Roseanne are complete angels, and they wanted to still help, despite being interstate for the time being. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
It wouldn't be long after arriving in Maine and out of the close watch of the grandparents would the reports to Child Protection and the police start coming in. October 17, 2016, the Department of Health and Human Services, or DHHS, as we'll refer to them for the rest of this story. DHHS received a report about Marissa, and this was to report the significant number of unexplained absences from school. This wouldn't be the last time Marissa's school would contact DHHS. They would make 9 more reports because simply Marissa wasn't going to school. And then on the rare occasions Marissa did come to school, she didn't always have food and she seemed neglected. But the school wouldn't be the only reports DHHS were receiving. Neighbours of the family were also calling in another 30 reports of concern for this little girl. Neighbours reported hearing shouting and loud banging noises. And because of all of these reports, a caseworker would be assigned to Marissa's case to investigate these claims. Although that wouldn't come until 7 months after the first report, May 31st, 2017. The assigned caseworker came to the family home twice unannounced, but no one answered the door. Calls to Sharon and Julio's phones would also go unanswered. Sharon would return the call several days later, and a meeting was arranged with Marissa at her school. And then after that, there'd be an entire family conference in the home. Now, this shouldn't concern any good parent, but we aren't talking about that today because if we were, I wouldn't be telling you Marissa's story. But this phone call must have created so much panic in Sharon. So much so, she almost immediately called the caseworker back and said she didn't approve of the meeting with her daughter without her presence. Because allegedly, Marissa had a nervous condition which was triggered by talking to people she didn't know. Now, I rarely have any opportunity to say good things about Child Protective Services on the podcast, but there are incredible caseworkers out there. I've worked with so many that, like myself, just care so much and want to help these children. But red tape and legislation makes that difficult. Your hands are tied. That's what ultimately made me leave that career, because I just couldn't do it anymore for my heart and sanity. But I digress. This caseworker in Marissa's case stuck to her guns. She was adamant to Sharon that she was talking to Marissa privately and there was nothing Sharon could say, no excuses she could make up that was going to change that. That very same day, the caseworker unsuccessfully attempted a home visit. May 31st, 2017, another report was made by a neighbour to the family. This time the neighbour reported to DHHS. The police attended a domestic disturbance a few days earlier, where Julio was seen hitting Marissa on the leg while they were getting into the car. And that Sharon was witness to all of this, but just sat in the car and did nothing to protect her daughter. That on other occasions, she had heard Julio screaming and the children crying inside the home. June 1st, 2017. The caseworker met with 10-year-old Marissa at her school, just like she said. Marissa seemed nervous, like she was scared to speak, saying she wasn't comfortable talking without her parents. This sweet girl was visibly shaking and staring straight ahead throughout the meeting. As part of the assessment, the caseworker also spoke with Marissa's teachers, and they spoke of the girl's many absences, that her parents hadn't let her go on any field trips throughout the school year. Sharon and Julio also informed the school that Marissa was going to be enrolled in a different school the next school year, which is actually heartbreaking to me, because it truly seems the school was really trying to help Marissa. But as we've seen in so many other cases, when schools do start picking up on the abuse and neglect, the guilty parents either continue to move and change schools to evade authorities, or simply withdraw the child altogether under the guise of homeschooling, completely isolating the child from any chance of receiving help. When it came to the scheduled home visit, Sharon was the only one in attendance, and the caseworker spoke about her concern for Marissa's mental health, based on the 10-year-old's behaviour during the meeting with her, and Sharon's own admissions that Marissa was a nervous little girl without her mother present. When the caseworker mentioned she wanted to speak to Marissa's doctor for her medical records, Sharon refused to sign off on it, stating that Julio needed to agree first because they made these type of decisions together. When the caseworker asked why Marissa wasn't given permission to go on field trips with her classmates, Sharon claimed it was out of concern her daughter would pass out due to her low weight. Sharon would deny that Julio ever yelled at her or the children, that instead she was the one responsible for the raised voices the neighbours were hearing, that she knew she was doing the wrong things by yelling at her children, but that she had her own mental health struggles, and that she was currently attempting to find the right treatment to get a handle on it. When Julio was interviewed by the caseworker, he flat out denied ever hitting Marissa, that he didn't understand why anyone would say anything otherwise, that the closest he got to any physical discipline was to hold Marissa down when she was having a tantrum to protect her from hurting herself, that his stepdaughter had only missed school for doctor's appointments, but that Marissa would get distressed at the thought of going to school, as the teachers would single her out and make her uncomfortable when she didn't want to talk. Julio mentioned the family were moving house shortly because they were being evicted, and repeated what Sharon said, that this would mean Marissa would be changing schools for the next school year. Again, running away to hide from the attention from the neighbours and the school, because they knew the gig was up. People were noticing now and the net was closing. And the only way they could continue abusing and neglecting Marissa was to move to a new location where no one knew what was going on. Next, the caseworker spoke to Joe and Roseanne Kennedy about any concerns they had about their granddaughter. Joe said that Sharon had been distant since moving to Maine, and on the few occasions he and his wife were able to speak with Marissa, she didn't seem like she wanted to talk with them. A vast difference to when they all lived together in New York, when Marissa spent basically all her time with her grandparents and would talk their ear off about anything and everything. Roseanne said she was concerned about how the family was coping with three children. Sharon and Julio had two babies in quick succession, as well as having Marissa in the household. The grandparents had offered to take Marissa back to New York to give the family a hand. She had already bonded with them and had a life in New York, so that made sense. But Sharon refused. Roseanne spoke of since they moved to Maine, Julio had shown a different side to them, that he seemed controlling and almost paranoid, that unless he was right there next to them, Sharon and Marissa weren't allowed to talk to them on the phone. However, despite all of this, and there is a lot of red flags here to really alert to this as possibly a case of child abuse and neglect, but despite that, Marissa's case would be closed, no further action. The reports did not stop coming in, however. Over the next 4 days, 5 more calls of concerns came through to DHHS. They didn't even bother investigating this time, and instead classified Marissa's case as being low risk, and transferred her case to the Alternative Response Program. And this is for low risk cases that, according to DHHS, they don't believe there is anything of concern going on, but these cases are still getting reports regardless. I think it's their way of pretending they're doing something when it's questioned. Why didn't they take action for repeated reports of suspected abuse and neglect? Throughout the month of September, DHHS attempted 6 times to get in touch with Sharon and Julio with no success. It wouldn't be until October 3, 2007, that a therapist working with Marissa called DHHS to report the 10-year-old had been hospitalised, the fourth time in a month. And this would be the first time any medical professional would report on the well-being of Marissa. This therapist was concerned about medical neglect because her parents had failed to follow up on recommended outpatient and inpatient home services for her recently diagnosed autism. And then October 9, 2017, DHHS were contacted again by the therapist, who actively had the family in the background. And there seemed to be some sort of crisis going on. There was screaming, and it was Sharon. Julio was given two options. Either the police needed to get involved, or he needed to take his wife into emergency care for a psychiatric evaluation. He obviously chose the latter, because why would he want the police involved with the family to uncover what we will find out later? But there also wasn't any follow-up to make sure Sharon was taken in for evaluation. So again, it was simply case closed. The next time we hear from the family was October 18, 2017. And I am incredibly frustrated with the amount of red flags marching as a parade. There is something big brewing here. There is no excuse why Marissa remained in the household. But October 18, 2017, the Stockton Springs Police Department contacted DHHS. They reported 8-week pregnant Sharon had another mental break, that she was threatening to harm herself with a large kitchen knife. And this was all in front of her three children. This again wasn't considered a risk to the children's safety, so no immediate action was taken. 2 days later, on October 20th, DHHS caseworkers met with Julio to find out what exactly was going on here. He claimed Sharon was in hospital receiving treatment for her mental health struggles, but also Marissa was being treated in a residential program as well. Although he wasn't prepared to disclose any further information than that, all he would say was there was a plan in place to get Sharon counselling once she returned home. And the caseworker just took Julio at his word. Even though during the later criminal investigation, there was no evidence Marissa was in an inpatient treatment program anywhere. It is possible that Julio completely made up this story to hide the fact Marissa was there and injured, and he didn't want the caseworker to find out. Regardless, the caseworker believed Marissa and the other children were safe. This would be the pattern for the next 4 months. Julio and Sharon would give the impression they were doing everything they could to help Sharon and Marissa with their mental health struggles. They would make these large promises and sign release forms with incorrect details. They would promise these plans to make the changes necessary. But then nothing would happen. Nothing would change. Neighbours would continue making reports to DHHS, and Marissa would continue to be regularly absent from school. January 2018. 6-month pregnant Sharon was again hospitalised, this time for suicidal thoughts. And yet another report was filed with DHHS because here is Sharon pregnant with a 10-year-old and two very young children, 2- and 1-year-old babies. A home visit was made on the 9th, but Sharon would reschedule the meeting for 3 days later, January 12, 2018. However, Sharon would again cancel this meeting too. When finally there was a successful home visit on January 24th, Julio and Sharon hadn't done anything they promised. Marissa still hadn't received any of the therapy she needed. She wasn't even enrolled. In February 2018, when Child Development Services evaluated the toddlers, there was concerns there. The 2-year-old was starting to mimic Sharon's suicidal tendencies. This is a 2-year-old baby we're talking about here. A special education caseworker went for a home visit February 23rd to speak to Julio and Sharon, as well as checking on the well-being of the three children. Sharon and Marissa were sitting on the couch when she arrived. The two younger children were allegedly having a nap. According to the caseworker, Marissa looked tired. She had a large bruise and scratches near her left eye and another bruise on her arm. However, when asked where these injuries came from, Marissa refused to answer. Julio would claim Marissa was a danger to herself, that she was in the midst of a mental health crisis and that she tried to harm herself. And this is why she was so tired. She'd worn herself out after an emotional outburst. Marissa even appeared to fall asleep during the home visit. Now, what would later be revealed was this little girl was seriously injured by this point, that Julio had to carry her to the couch because she could no longer walk by herself, barely clinging onto consciousness. This would be the last time anyone outside of the family would see Marissa alive. February 25th, 2018. First responders arrived at the home at 7 Harbour View Drive with reports of an unresponsive child. When first responders arrived, it was clearly evident the child was already dead. Julio telling medical staff he had found his stepdaughter near the furnace in the basement, unconscious and barely breathing, blood coming out of her mouth. Sharon claiming she didn't know what happened, that maybe she passed out and hurt herself while watching Despicable Me. But Marissa's injuries were just too violent and extensive for this to be a tragic accident. Doctors quickly calling in police on the suspected child abuse case. The Stockton Springs Police Department immediately taking Sharon and Julio into custody on suspicion of murder. Now, suddenly, Julio would be telling a different story. He would confess the couple would regularly beat on Marissa. They would scratch, punch, kick, and hit her with a belt and a mop. That they would make her kneel while Sharon stood on her legs. Now, maybe Julio was hoping in cooperating with police right from the start. Maybe he would get a lighter sentence, and also sharing the blame with his wife meant he wouldn't be going down alone. During Sharon's second interview, she was told that Julio had confessed everything. And she also admitted that they had forced Marissa to kneel naked on the kitchen tiles, the little girl's hands raised above her head. But it was Julio that inflicted the physical abuse. He was the one that hit Marissa repeatedly with a belt in her stomach and ribs. That this was a daily occurrence for the last 2 weeks of her life. That Julio beat Marissa so hard across the ribs, the metal handle broke off of the mop. Sharon would admit that 2 days before her daughter died, February 23rd, Marissa had come to her and told her that she was dying. Yet Sharon did nothing to get her daughter the medical care she was in dire need of. Shortly after this, Marissa stopped moving and her speech became slurred. Still, there was no urgency here to get this little girl any medical treatment, because they simply thought she was pretending to be injured. So because of that, to teach her a lesson, Julio and Sharon attacked Marissa again. But then even two idiot monsters like Julio and Sharon, they couldn't ignore the fact anymore that Marissa was not in a good way, and that she was most likely not going to survive. This was when they hatched their plan on how to cover up what they had done. They staged the basement to make it look like Marissa had accidentally fallen and then called 911. But even without the confession, nothing really supported anything outside of this being a non-accidental death. The medical examiner determined Marissa's cause of death being battered child syndrome. Her injuries included bleeding on the brain, a lacerated liver, and multiple old existing injuries. Investigators found no blood in the basement, but they did find blood around a chair in the kitchen, behind the toilet, and in Marissa's bed. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Sharon and Julio Carrillo were quickly arrested. Marissa's younger siblings, they were taken into custody of DHHS. They were taken into custody of Child Protective Services. It would be revealed that at the time of Marissa's death, Julio had started the process of illegally adopting Marissa. Even after confessing to everything, Julio and Sharon still tried to claim Marissa was the violent one, that she would self-harm and act out aggressively towards the other members of the family. Julio Carrillo chose to plead guilty to depraved indifference murder. He would be sentenced to 55 years in prison. However, Marissa's mother Sharon chose to face a jury of her peers, pleading not guilty for causing her daughter's death. Sharon also discovered that she was never really legally married to Julio. He was still technically married to a woman in Kentucky when he married Sharon. Instead of divorce, she needed to get the union annulled. And this annulment was finalised in December 2018, 2 days after she was found guilty of her daughter's murder. Sharon Kennedy's defence team would suggest that she was also a victim of Julio's aggression. Graphic photos would be found on Julio's phone of Sharon and Marissa kneeling naked on the tile floor with their arms up. Sharon said Julio forced her to do this several times a day. In other videos, Sharon could be seen crying and begging Julio to leave her alone. During the opening statements of the trial, Assistant Attorney General Don Malcomer addressed the jury, quote, "In short, ladies and gentlemen, 10-year-old Marissa Kennedy was beaten to death over a period of months. Who beat Marissa Kennedy to death? Her mother and stepfather." Unquote. Sharon's defense attorney, Christopher McLean, he admitted to the case was gruesome, but argued because of Sharon's low IQ, that she was easily persuaded to give false statements to incriminate herself out of fear of Julio. So it seemed that Sharon's legal team were pointing the finger directly at Julio. The jury were subjected to graphic photographs of the injuries that were inflicted upon Marissa. They were told details of how she'd been beaten with fists, feet, a metal mop and a belt. Jurors were seen wiping away tears, unable to hide their physical reactions to what they were seeing. They would hear from the special education caseworker who had visited the home to check on Marissa and her siblings, the last visit being only days before the 10-year-old's death. During this visit, the caseworker saw Marissa with a large bruise on her head and she seemed unsteady on her feet. Also to testify was Marissa's fifth grade teacher, Catherine Legree, and she would discount the parents' claims that the 10-year-old had violent tendencies. Catherine spoke of a sweet girl who was quiet and polite and always did what was asked of her. Quote, "She got along with her peers. She liked to read. She especially liked to read. And she had joined the Librarians Book Club." Unquote. The jury would reject the defence's argument and found Sharon Kennedy guilty of depraved indifference murder. The judge did acknowledge that while she was too a victim of Julio, she still actively contributed to the abuse on her daughter, that she did nothing to protect her and get her medical help. Sharon Kennedy was sentenced to 48 years in prison.
Mr. Forbin, have you agreed upon a verdict?
Yes.
Mr. Forbin, what say you? Is Sharon Carrillo, the defendant, guilty or not guilty of depraved indifference murder?
Guilty.
Mr. Forbin, have you correctly reported the verdict?
Yes.
So say you, Mr. Forbin?
Yes.
So say you all.
Yes.
After the murder of Marissa Kennedy, Maine DHHS opened an inquest into how they were handling calls of potential child abuse and neglect. Marissa's siblings were placed into child protective custody, including the new baby that was born while Sharon was in jail awaiting trial. Joe and Roseanne Kennedy advocate for changes to DHHS's intake procedures to better protect children like their granddaughter.
Roseanne and myself, a little bit of happiness, maybe a little bit of closure, but we do miss our granddaughter.
Marissa would later be described by those who knew and loved her as a beautiful little girl whose smile could light up a room. Her favourite colour was purple, her favourite movie was Frozen, and she could spend hours playing with her dollhouses. She was the love of her grandparents' lives, and she will be forever missed. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice, and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.
The This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.